convene, please. All right. So, Ms. McCann, could you introduce our next item?
I would be very happy to introduce the next item, which is item 11. I'm going to take these a little bit out of order now to fit our time schedule before lunch and hold public forum until after lunch.
We'll get back.
So item 11 is titled Transformation and Recovery, Santa Rosa Channel Island. The purpose of presenting this to you today is to share a really good news story, and it features a fabulous habitat and hydrology restoration since 20 years ago when our staff, Howard Kolb, performed his excellent regulatory work in collaboration with the National Park Service to eliminate grazing and prevent continuing ecosystem impacts on Santa Rosa Island and the Channel Islands. And Kate Faulkner, former Chief of Natural Resources Management at Channel Islands National Park, is here to make the presentation. She worked for the Park Service for 35 years with the focus on protecting native species and restoring ecosystems in the Channel Islands National Park. In particular, Kate and her staff ensured the implementation of road and grazing management practices on Santa Rosa Island. Her actions and their actions abated water quality impacts and allowed the island's unique ecosystem to recover. Kate retired in December of 2015 and has graciously agreed to present this to you today.
Thank you so much for having me. So this has been a long relationship between the park and the water quality staff and the board, beginning back in the 1990s. So I'll go a little bit into the background of the national park, the islands, and what transpired on Santa Rosa Island. And there's a lot of details and complexity, which I'm not planning to go into, but I'm more than willing to answer any questions that you might have. What I want to highlight is that this really has been a partnership, that the changes that have happened on the islands, and particularly on Santa Rosa Island, could not have happened without the assistance that we've received from many agencies and organizations. So the California Channel Islands National Park includes 5 of the 8 Channel Islands. And so the island that we'll be focusing on primarily today is Santa Rosa Island. It's the second largest of the islands in California. Santa Cruz, just to the east, is slightly larger. So Santa Rosa Island is our primary island of our topic today. So all of the Channel Islands were heavily used beginning in the 1800s. Non-native animals were introduced to all of the islands. They're primarily sheep grazing to start with. Feral pigs were introduced. Some islands also had cattle. And Santa Rosa Island actually started out as a sheep island. And in the early 1900s, new owners changed the management. They removed the sheep and they brought cattle to the island. And so through the 1900s, it was primarily a cattle ranch. So now we're at Santa Rosa Island. It's a 54,000 acre island, and it was included in Channel Islands National Park in 1980. That's when the park was established, but it was privately owned at the time, and the island could have stayed in private ownership. However, the prior owners said that they wanted to sell to the National Park Service, given that it was within the boundaries of the park. And they sold, the former owners were, their name was Vail and Vickers Cattle Ranch. They sold to the National Park Service in 1986. And at that time, they were following traditional cattle management practices. They also had deer and elk that had been introduced to the island. and they were hunting them. There actually also were feral pigs on the island at the time. The first thing that the Park Service did was eliminate the feral pigs. So they were gone by 1992, but the cattle, deer, and elk continued on the island. And this shot here is Arlington Canyon, and we'll revisit this canyon a little bit later in the presentation. But I think this gives you sort of an idea of, you know, what a typical riparian area on Santa Rosa Island looked like and why we had some of the water quality issues that were documented through the water quality monitoring that was being done by the park in the early 1990s. So in 1995, the park was issued a cleanup or abatement order from the Central Coast Water Quality Control Board, and it was based on the data that had been collected by the park, primarily in three drainages on Santa Rosa Island. And what it showed was that we had very elevated levels, particularly of fecal coliforms and total coliforms, and there was very little vegetation in most of the drainages. So there were some subsequent lawsuits. We were sued by an environmental group, National Parks Conservation Association, and we were also sued by the former landowners, the Vail and Vickers. And the decision in the case was that, the decision was that the park was responsible for deciding on the management of the island, that there was not a requirement that the former landowners were able to continue to operate as they had been. And the parties decided to come to a settlement agreement where what was agreed upon was that we would phase out the cattle ranching almost immediately, and the deer and elk would be allowed to continue on the island until 2011, also under a phase-out program. And then as of 2011, all aspects of the former land use would end. So the biggest change, I think, that happened from the water quality point of view was the removal of cattle from Santa Rosa. There was approximately 5,000 head of cattle on the island, and they were all removed in 1998. And so just giving looking at the island and the vegetation, you can see that the island is mostly grassland. It's mostly non-native grasses. We think that the the natural vegetation condition of the island would have been, of course, riparian woodland. There's chaparral, coastal sage scrub, probably would have been much more extensive and would have occupied a lot of these areas that are currently non-native grasslands. And we are seeing some transition to the native shrublands. So back to Arlington Canyon that we saw earlier. So this was how Arlington looked in 1995. And at that time, we worked with some water quality specialists, and we established photo points in a number of the drainages on Santa Rosa. So this was the viewpoint in 1995. And then this is going back to that same point. This is in 2012. And so here you can see, here's the same bluff that we're looking at. And so the transition that's happened, besides, as you can see, there was no vegetation, and when we'd have heavy precipitation, all the water would just run off the island. Very little was being held within the drainage. As a result of removing the cattle, we had a huge point bar that was developed, became vegetated, and now the stream channel is holding water and it's meandering around this big bend. And that's the kind of change that we saw quite rapidly on many of the drainages on Santa Rosa Island. So we'll look at a couple other photo points. This was old ranch pasture on Santa Rosa Island. Similarly, there's no vegetation in the drainage bottom. And this is that same pasture, old ranch. And so you can see here, you can see here some of these, the non-native grasses that were here, they are moving towards a backgrass scrub, coastal sage scrub type community. Lobo Canyon, and this is one of the canyons that we were able to visit with the staff from the water board that went out with us in September. And so Lobo Canyon in 1995, and then here we are in 2015, the same view. And these pictures had been shared with staff in the past, but there is nothing like actually being out there on the island and trying to get through this very heavy growth of vegetation. And since pictures aren't adequate to show the changes that have happened on the island, we would like to extend an invitation to the board to take a visit out to Santa Rosa Island. It really is. It's a magnificent island, and you've accepted. So just I want to broaden it, even just beyond water, is we were looking at the ability of these islands to sequester carbon. Like, what is the standing vegetation on these islands? And so this Dr. Patrick Gonzalez, who was at UC Berkeley, did an analysis of, how has the amount of vegetation, the carbon sequestration, changed throughout the Park Islands. And because of the drought between 2001 and 2010, we actually have lost vegetation on most of the islands. And there was only two exceptions. And one of those exceptions is Santa Rosa Island, and that's because of the removal of the cattle. So we're seeing the vegetation growth, not just in the riparian areas, that's where it responded the quickest, but island-wide. So we're seeing a lot of really positive recovery of vegetation. So with Santa Rosa Island, what happens was a lot of the uplands were stripped, and a lot of this happened due to the sheep era during the late 1800s. So now with the removal of the ungulates, the deer and elk are also now gone from the island, we're seeing improved vegetation growth, and we're seeing the ability to hold water in the system. And not only just holding the water in the system and building soil, but also the ability to actually bring more water in. And one of the things that's really important to the hydrology of Santa Rosa Island is fog. And the uplands of Santa Rosa Island probably used to be covered by island oak, woodland, and chaparral. And these species capture fog on their leaves, and then that drip is like rainfall during the dry part of the year. And so the grazing actually created an unnatural desert on that island by not only removing vegetation and allowing water to run off, but also losing that ability to capture fog water during the summer. So if you stand in one of the island oak groves that remains on a foggy day, it is absolutely raining within the oak groves. So the park, now that we have removed the ungulates, now we're trying to restore, jumpstart the restoration of these native woodlands up on the upper parts of the island so that we can better restore the hydrology throughout the entire island. So what we've been able to do on Santa Rosa Island is not benefiting just water, but also all parts of the ecosystem. The park does have a long-term monitoring program, and we had done the water quality monitoring in the past. We've recently revisited some of the permanent stations that are in place that have been measuring the physical parameters of drainages, and we've been seeing that the change as these drainages narrow and become more meandering and more heavily vegetated. We're currently developing a water quality monitoring program in we're cooperating with SCORP and UCLA and Cal State Channel Islands, and so that protocol is almost in place. We recently, about a year and a half ago, actually walked all the drainages on the island to determine and map how much standing water was there. And we figured, we were hoping that was towards the end of the drought, but we thought any place that had perennial water at that point would be a potential place for long-term water monitoring. we were amazed at how much surface water was still on that island. And so we were using that information to develop a statistically sound plan for monitoring a subset of the island drainages. So recently we received a letter of compliance from the Central Coast Board. And so we're very glad to close that chapter of the relationship. It was an important part of getting us to where we're at. Our plan is, of course, to continue to monitor on the island and to keep the board informed as to the progress on Santa Rosa and hopefully to host folks out there. So just wanted to thank everyone for their role in this whole process. Yeah.
Thank you very much. A picture worth a thousand words, yeah. But I heard from staff that the pictures do not give justice to the three-dimensional experience that you have encountered. Now, in terms of wildlife, and maybe I should, I'm sorry, I should have let my fellow board members ask questions first, but did you reintroduce any wildlife on the island, or what we see is actually through, natural recovery?
It is largely natural recovery. We had a major issue with decline of foxes. Island fox are a separate species that only occurs on the Channel Islands. And they were driven down to near extinction on three of the northern islands. And that was due to the presence of feral pigs and predation by golden eagles. So we were live capturing golden eagles. We did eliminate pigs on both Santa Rosa and Santa Cruz Island. They were the primary food for the golden eagles. We also have reestablished bald eagles on the islands. So that's the primary species that was lost from the ecosystem. That was primarily due to DDT in the marine ecosystem. And we established hack towers on Santa Cruz Island. And from those, the chicks in the hack towers have now colonized the other islands. And we do have three nesting pairs of bald eagles now on Santa Rosa Island.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Mayor Delgado.
Yeah, thank you. It's a great success story over 20 years. Do you anticipate in the future there will be any significant grasslands on Santa Rosa?
We do. We don't even have any pictures of Santa Rosa from sort of historic times. And certainly we have nothing that really gives us a really concrete picture of what was the natural mix of vegetation on the island prior to grazing. So based on soil surveys, based on remnant plants that we might find, some of these plant species maybe are tightly associated with different types of plant communities, we have developed what we think would be an approximation of what the vegetation community mix would be on that island. And we think that there are areas, there's a lot of native grasses on the island. And there's certainly areas where the soils are more characteristic of grasslands than of one of the shrubland or woodland communities. So it looks like the grasslands probably were not a dominant vegetation community, but they would have occurred in areas with maybe the appropriate exposure or soil type or other physical aspects that would allow grasses to outcompete other species.
Did the Native Americans burn ambitiously on Santa Rosa?
Well, I don't think ambitiously. That is still sort of an issue of contention and discussion among anthropologists. We don't get a lot of natural fire out there, so there's not very much in the way of lightning strikes, maybe once every 100 years or more. And there is some evidence of more charcoal in sediments than you would expect just from natural ignitions. but it doesn't look like it was a big part of the Native culture out there. The villages are mostly coastal sites on the islands, and of course it was a very rich marine environment, and so it appears that the primary focus was on harvesting from marine environment.
The reason I think this is interesting is because across the state where there's not a lot of management, it turns into coyote brush scrub. If you go right around San Francisco Bay Area, you go down to Big Sur Coast and other places. So this is converting to a scrubland without mm-hmm. a lot of management or ungulates, to the loss of things like grassland. So are there many native grasses, perennial annuals? Are there many native forbs that depend on grasslands?
Yeah, the native grasses, we've been amazed at how well they persisted. They were heavily grazed. They were not able to withstand that level of grazing. And so they were not seen in very many places. But once the cattle were removed, all of a sudden, they really started to show throughout the grasslands on the island. And so we're primarily seeing the nacelle, the purple needle grass, and we have the Lamy's tribicoide. It's a creeping ryegrass. That's also extremely extensive. You know, what the long term will be, it's a little bit harder to say, but I would say it's not, we don't think it's going to be the dominant vegetation community.
So will you manage for anything other than scrub, or do you just let nature decide the mosaic?
Generally, we would let nature take its course, and we're going to let the veg communities sort of sort it out for themselves. But what we are trying to do, of course, is to tweak the system where we need to, where we think that there's something that is really off. So, for instance, retaining or bringing back the more natural hydrology of the island by bringing back the woodlands, trying to do that first because we don't have a lot of money. So what we're trying to do is identify strategically what can we do in one area that's going to have the most broad positive effect on the entire ecosystem. And so that's why we've identified this, the need to bring back vegetation to the upper slopes of the island. We also remove non-native plant species that are very aggressive invaders, ones that can invade intact ecosystems. But there are also a lot of non-native plant species on the island that we think without the disturbance of the ungulates, in the long term, they will be largely outcompeted by the native species.
Thank you very much.
So, thanks.
Any questions?
Well, thank you very much. Did you have a question?
I just wanted to reiterate my acceptance of the invitation.
I saw a twinkle in the eye of every board member when
well,
you
well, great. But we really would love to host you out on the island. I should have mentioned that the island, like all of the park islands, it is open to the public, and we do have camping on all of the park islands, including Santa Rosa Island. We do have the historic ranch complex. You can hike anywhere on the island. It's there's a lot to see. It's a big island. So whether you come out on a trip that we host or if you want to come out with a family at some other time, Island Packers makes regular runs out to Santa Rosa Island, particularly during the summer.
So, well, thank you for the open invitation.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Can I make a comment?
Yes, of course.
I wanted to just point out a couple things. One is that the water board's role in this process, starting back, I think, was 95 when the cleanup board was up.
Probably 92. Howard was our project manager, but the actual order came in 95.
Our role was to protect water quality and beneficial uses, and it was not to eliminate grazing. Mm. We actually, Howard Kolb, I should say, spent an enormous amount of time talking with the ranch owners and how they were doing grazing, and emphasized to them that we were not there to eliminate grazing, that grazing can be done in a way that protects water quality and beneficial uses. And it just so happens that in this case, grazing was eliminated, but that was not the purpose of the order, and we did not require that. Just the opposite. Howard spent an enormous amount of time trying to emphasize that grazing could be done and protect the environment. And as another example of that, Howard also worked with Cal Poly. They have about 6,000 acres of grazing lands there. And Howard got a grant from the US EPA to do something called a paired watershed study, where you take two watersheds that are as closely resemble each other as possible, set up a monitoring program. One of them is a control, one watershed is a control, where you continue grazing as you normally were, similar to what you saw here, pretty high impact grazing. And in the other watershed, you adopt best management practices. That was a 10-year study. Howard got the money for it, set it up with Cal Poly, and after 3 years, Cal Poly contacted Howard and said, "We're convinced. We want to switch all 6,000 acres to these new management practices." And Howard said, "No." He said, "It's a 10-year study. You have to keep operating on this control watershed for 10 years using these older, more higher impact management practices. And on the other watershed, continue the new management practices." Well, they converted the rest of their property to the new management practices. And we have data that shows the improvement in water quality on the two paired watersheds and the one where they used the advanced management practices. But the interesting thing was Cal Poly didn't want to change because of the water quality data. They were getting better production on the land where they changed the management practices. And so that's why they wanted to, the main reason why they wanted to switch. So I recommend that if you can, you do go see Santa Rosa Island, but also you could go right down the street here to Cal Poly. And I just wanted to acknowledge the work that Howard did. It was extraordinary work. And it predates our 2012 Ag Order, our 2004 Ag Order. Howard was already doing this kind of work. And he has these results on tens of thousands of acres in our region. It's pretty extraordinary.
Thank you for that clarification. And Dr. Hunter, I think, had a comment or question.
Yes, I'm so glad you filled in the details, because I just want to share with you, and Howard, I cut my teeth on watershed issues and management through that project. And it was a nexus for and Karen certainly was deeply involved and at the head of all of this as well. I think there were like almost 50 agencies that were involved with looking at watershed management for Morro Bay. And one of the benefits that you didn't mention that I will add to the list is reducing sediment into the bay, into Morro Bay, which is the biggest problem that the estuary is facing. And so when we have the opportunity to actually put into place these, if you will, demonstration projects and begin to shift practice through actually convincing and showing that the priority for cattle ranching is something we respect, but we also have a great deal more knowledge. Technology is just changing all the time. And so anyway, in regard to that work, I made my way to a PhD. So thank you, Howard.
If I could just add something related to Santa Rosa Island, the changes that happened through that settlement agreement process, and the Park Service was at the table, the former landowners were also at the table, the ranchers, and we were not actually pushing for elimination of grazing. We change was going to happen, but we were looking at implementing a more intensive management scenario, and it was actually the former landowners who decided they didn't want to make that investment, and they chose to remove the cattle in exchange for us allowing the deer and elk to stay on that island. So there was nothing that came from the water board that was pushing for elimination. We thought negotiating for something different, but like I said, it was a settlement agreement, and we felt like that was maybe the best deal that we could get. And fortuitously, I think it actually did have the greatest benefits in the quickest time for the for water quality.
Mr. Young?
What percent of the 54,000 acres were actually grazed?
100%.
Really?
Yeah.
All
of
them?
Yeah.
Would the cattle go everywhere?
They went everywhere, yes. So the entire island was divided into, I think it was 10 pastures. So pastures were very large, but there was some fencing on the island. But so basically you would have pastures that they varied in size, but averaging roughly 5,000 acres. And so the cattle would be out there for a year and a half, and pretty much still they were boated out to the island. And once they were put out in their pasture, they were largely left there for a year and a half, and then rounded up after that time and brought back to the mainland. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
I spent a lot of time in the Santa Barbara Harbor mm-hmm. in the 80s mm-hmm. and used to watch the Vaquero, too,
mm-hmm. yep.
going back and forth, you know, between the island.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such an interesting thing because I used to think to myself, what is cattle ranching doing going on across the channel on this island? You know, could it ever really be profitable to do that? But, and that boat, remember seeing mm-hmm. the Vaquero?
Mm-hmm.
An
yeah.
odd looking wooden boat, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the old days, before they had an adequate pier to, they didn't have a way to offload the cattle onto the pier, and so they actually pushed them into the water and they swam to the island when they came out. In more recent times, since I've been here, they were the cattle went on and off through a chute on the pier.
Mm.
It's amazing that they continued the operation as long as they did. It was an extremely mm-hmm. it's very intensive to transport that number of cattle across the ocean.
I was there about 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
By a small plane mm-hmm. coming out of the Santa Barbara Airport. Does that transport still exist?
Now the transport is with Channel Islands Aviation out of Camarillo Airport.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're a concessionaire to the Park Service. And so that is the one island that the public can fly to.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Just as a little side factoid, you know, there are cattle being boated from much greater distance, for example, from Hawaii, you do have cattle which are actually brought to California here for being fattened up.
Really?
And then sold here for market. So they're raised in Hawaii and then they're brought to California, actually to the Central Coast.
Really?
So that's quite a long distance. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so
much.
We
appreciate.
Thank you, Howard.
and certainly keep up the good work.
Thank you.
It's great to see this. So thanks again.